The following is a message from the pulpit of Parkside Baptist Church in Mesquite, Texas, led by Pastor Mike Wells.
Thank you very much. I'm grateful to get to be here this week. I've enjoyed it very much. I told the pastor I appreciate the spirit of your meeting. It's an uplifting spirit. It's a building spirit. I appreciate that tremendously. I want to ask you tonight to open your Bible to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1. Deuteronomy chapter 1. While you're opening to Deuteronomy chapter 1, I'm just going to take about 60 seconds and say that my father was in the 82nd Airborne in World War II. He fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And so I wrote a book about my father. It's called Quiet Courage. And it's out there on the book table. But the reason I mention that is after I wrote the book, 11 times we've taken a group of people from our college and from other churches around the country to Europe. And it's an 8-day trip, and we see the things that my father did in World War II. We found the very foxhole he fought in, some of the bunkers he captured, some of the villages he helped to liberate. And then we see things like the Rhine River Valley, several castles, the new Schwanstein Castle, the most photographed castle in Europe. We take a tour on it. Inside of it, do a horse-drawn carriage ride up to the front of it, up on the side of the mountain. And we go to Oberammergau, where they had the first Passion play back in the, I think, in the 14 or 1500s. We tell that story about that. Then we go to the Zugspitze, the tallest mountain in Germany. Go to Dachau concentration camp. It's a very moving experience. It's not gross, but it's very moving. And then we spend the last 3 days down in Switzerland, and I always say that college kids who go on the trip with us that want to, they go skiing, but my wife and I go on a horse-drawn sleigh ride. And but it's a beautiful trip, and we always leave on the Friday after Thanksgiving, and we're gone 8 days, then we come back. And so if you're interested in that, that's all I'm going to say about it. If you're interested in some more information about that trip, we have some brochures on the book table, and you're welcome to go out there. The only thing I'll say else about the trip is that if you ever have given any thought to, boy, someday I'd like to go to Europe, well, this will give you a big variety of things to see. We're in Belgium, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. But also the unique thing about it is you get to go with all Christian people. You don't have to put up with any of the stuff that a worldly crowd would deal with. So if you're interested in it, go by the table and get a brochure, and we'll be glad to answer any questions for you. Deuteronomy chapter 1. Moses is leading the children of Israel from Egypt to the Promised Land, and they're about to cross the Jordan River. And one last time, just before they cross the Jordan River and go into the Promised Land, they stop, and Moses makes a big speech to the children of Israel. In fact, the book of Deuteronomy is that speech that he made. And we're going to read some of the opening remarks tonight that he made as he was getting into that speech. Now, you have to remember that he's making these remarks and he's giving this speech at the end of the 40-year journey, just before they cross the Jordan River and go into the Promised Land. But what he says in these opening comments refer back to something that happened about 6 months into their journey. So we're going to read here in a moment what he says at the end of the journey, but he's talking about something that happened 39 and a half years ago. So we begin in Deuteronomy chapter 1 with verse 9. And I spake unto you at that time 39 and a half years ago, saying, I am not able to bear you myself alone. The Lord your God hath multiplied you, and behold, you are this day 39 and a half years ago, as the stars of heaven for multitude. So Moses is reminding them here at the end of the journey that I told you back at the beginning of the journey that there's so many of you that you're like the stars of heaven. God's multiplied you so much. And he said, because there's so many of you, I can't take care of all of you by myself. All right, let's continue in verse 12. How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance? I want you to notice that word cumbrance. And your burden, I want you to notice that word burden. And your strife, I want you to notice that word strife. Take you wise men and understanding and known among your tribes, and I will make them rulers over you. And ye answered me, 39 and a half years ago and said, "The thing which thou hast spoken is good for us to do." So I took the chief of your tribes, wise men and known, and made them heads over you, captains over thousands, and captains over hundreds, and captains over fifties, and captains over tens, and officers among your tribes. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, "Hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother, and the stranger that is with him. Ye shall not respect persons in judgment, but ye shall hear the small as well as the great. Ye shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is God's, and the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me, and I will hear it. And I commanded you at that time all the things which ye should do." Moses explained to the people, or at least he reminded them, that he had explained to them earlier that there were so many of them that he couldn't take care of all of them by himself. He said, "I can't take care of all your cumbrance and all your burden and all your strife by myself." And by the way, I want to give you Ray Young's definition of the word cumbrance and the word burden and the word strife. Now, I'm not sure that Noah Webster would agree with my definition, but when we get to heaven, he'll find out I was right and he was wrong. But my definition in this context here of the word cumbrance, that your cumbrance are those things that slow you down in life. Those things that you have to get through life, but sometimes having to deal with those things slow you down as you try to make progress on your journey. I'm talking about your house, your health, your pots and pans, your furniture, your clothes, your food, your car, your money, your job, your cat, your dog, your purse, your bicycle, your makeup, your toothbrush, your books, all those things that you have to get through life. You remember the songwriter said, "Cumbered with a load of care"? Your burden is the fact that you have to carry all that stuff through life with you. You know, those things that we're talking about tonight, it seems like we sort of have to have them to get through life. But sometimes the fact that you have to carry all that stuff with you, it becomes quite a burden. You know, a house is a wonderful thing to have until the roof starts to leak, and then it becomes a burden. You know, a car is a wonderful thing to have until you rush out of the house one morning with a donut in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. You're already 10 minutes behind schedule and there's a flat tire on the car. Then it becomes a burden. You know, furniture is wonderful stuff to have until you have to load it on a two-wheel cart and pull it with a donkey 500 miles across the desert. Then it becomes a burden to have all that furniture. And your strife is when the next fella to you has his furniture in his cart, and you've got your furniture in your cart, and both of you are trying to make the journey from Egypt to the promised land, but somehow one of you gets out of line, and some of his things bump into some of your things, and then you have strife. And you know, can you see the scene here? Moses is out front. He's got everybody in line. They're all ready to go on their journey. And everybody's got their little two-wheel cart. And everybody's got their things stacked up on their cart. And everybody's got their donkey to pull their cart. And everything's going along just fine until maybe somewhere down the trail, maybe 3 months, maybe 4 months. In this case, it was about 6 months into the journey. And somebody bumped into somebody else. And when they did, they had strife. You know, that's a picture of my life and your life. I've got my stuff I'm trying to carry through life. I've got my house, my car, my job, my clothes, my money, my responsibilities. You've got your stuff you're trying to carry through life. And you know, we do fairly well as long as we continue to move forward carrying our stuff. But if somebody else gets in our way, or we get in somebody else's way, then you have problems. And you know, that's exactly what happened. They were about 6 months into the journey, and somebody bumped into somebody else, and those two men came to Moses. And they said to Moses, We need to talk to you. And Moses said, okay, what do you need? And they sat down and they began to explain the story. And one fellow said, well, I was going along just fine and some of his things bumped into some of my things. And the other fellow said, oh, no, that's not the way it happened. Some of your things bumped into some of my things. And Moses said, well, let's talk about it. And so they did. They sat down, they talked about it. And by the time they got through talking about it, four more were standing in line waiting for their turn to talk about it. And by the time Moses got through talking to those four, 12 more were standing in line waiting for their turn to talk about the things that they, the strife that they were having. And you know, when you're in the ministry, that means that, you know, the word ministry comes from the word minister, to serve. When you're in the ministry, you're ministering to, you're serving people. And anytime you deal with people, you're going to deal with cumbrance, because everybody just about has some cumbrance. And anytime you deal with people and their cumbrance, you're going to deal with some burdens, because most everybody's cumbrance sometimes becomes a burden. And if you deal with people's cumbrance and burdens, they often turn into strife. Often when we're under a burden, it becomes a time and a point in our life when we're susceptible to strife. And by the way, the pastor's not the only one in the ministry. The staff's not the only one in the ministry. You know, the greeter at the front door, he's in the ministry. The usher that takes up the offering is in the ministry. The Sunday school teacher that teaches the class is in the ministry. The nursery worker that changes the diapers, they're in the ministry. The bus workers, they're in the ministry. The junior church workers are in the ministry. The one running the PA and the cameras, they're in the ministry. Those that preach in the jail services and at the nursing home, and those that to direct the choir and the children's choir, and those that go soul winning and pass out tracts and bring visitors, that we're all in the ministry of serving people. And if you're not willing to deal with people's cumbrance and burden and strife, then the only thing left is to deal with animals or things. My family and I were on vacation several years ago, and we were out west, as we often went, and we were driving across the state of Wyoming. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in Wyoming or not, but the part of Wyoming where we were driving, we were on a state highway, not an interstate, and we had been driving for about 2.5 hours. And it dawned on me that in the last 2.5 hours, we had not seen another human being outside our van. Not another van passed us. Not another vehicle came this way and met us. We didn't see a house. We didn't see a building for 2.5 hours. All we saw was sagebrush as far as you could see on the left side of the road and a barbed wire fence on the right side of the road. And after about 2.5 hours, we came over a little knoll. And when we did, I noticed a man riding a horse on the other side of the barbed wire fence. And when I got closer, I could tell he had some tools tied to his saddle. He had a pair of wire pliers. He had a pair of wire snips. He had a crowbar. He had a claw hammer. And he had a little bucket, I assume, with some staples in it. And he was riding along real slow, looking at that fence. And you know what he was doing. He was looking to see if something was broke, and if anything was broke, he was going to get off the horse and fix the fence. And I thought to myself, wow, what a job. He doesn't have to draw up any budgets. He doesn't have to get any purchase orders approved. He doesn't have to appear before the board. He doesn't have to hire any employees or fire any employees. He doesn't have to argue with anybody about any of the decisions he makes. And I was thinking to myself, wow, what a job. And about that time we got even with him, and I said right out loud, but I love people too much. And my wife said, what? Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, what a job. But I love working with people. And Moses said, I myself cannot work with all these people by myself. And so the question is this, who's going to be willing and who's going to become qualified to step up to the point to where they're able to help Moses oversee all of this stuff that these people have and help Moses oversee everybody carrying their stuff from the Egypt to the promised land? And then occasionally when there's some strife, who's going to help Moses deal with that? Can you see them? They've all got their little two-wheel cart. They've all got their furniture stacked on the cart. They've got their clay water pot full of water on top of the furniture. And they've got their donkey tied to the front of the cart. They've got their goat tied to the back of the cart. They've got their children all in a row. They've got their ducks or their geese all in a row. And they're making progress. They're all on their route. And they're all headed to the promised land until about 6 months into the journey, one fella forgot to grease the axle on his cart. And when he did, the wheel fell off his cart. When the wheel fell off his cart tilted over. When his cart tilted over, the clay water pot fell off. When the clay water pot fell off, it hit a big rock in the sand. When it hit a big rock in the sand, it broke into a dozen pieces. Now there's a sharp edge sticking up out of the sand. The next guy that comes along, his donkey steps on the sharp edge. When he steps on the sharp edge, he kicks. When he kicks, he hits the goose of the guy next to him. That guy's geese scatter, and they get mixed in with the next guy's geese. And now this guy's children and that guy's children are running around arguing about whose goose is whose, and this guy's wife and that guy's wife are running around arguing about whose kids are whose. Does it sound like your family reunion? Does it sound like your Sunday school picnic? Does it sound like choir practice? Or the bus workers meeting, or first day of the school year? It sounds kind of like the life I live in and the kind of like the life you live in. And you know, every one of those are as common as the other. If you have people, you have cumbrance. If you have cumbrance, you have burdens. If you have burdens, you have strife. Now, what you and I have to do is we have to figure out where we want to fit in. You know, you could be the one who has no stuff. There are people like that here in America. We sometimes refer to them as homeless people. Or there are those who have some stuff, but they're not going anywhere with it. I grew up over in Louisiana, and there was this one bayou that we went up and down all the time when I was a kid to go duck hunting and frog gigging and gator hunting and running trot lines and so forth. We were up and down that bayou thousands of times in my lifetime. I lived there for 18 years, and somebody had gotten right off the main channel of the bayou. Down the main channel, it was about as wide as from that section there to this section, and it was anywhere from 4 to 12 feet deep. But on the outside of the main channel, on both sides of the bayou, there was a cypress forest. There were cypress trees growing up out of the water. The water was 6 inches to 2 feet deep, and as far as you could see that way, there was nothing but cypress trees. And somebody had gotten about 20 yards off the main channel and about 10 feet above the water, and they built a shack. And you know, I know somebody lived in that shack. Because sometimes we'd go up the bayou and the boat would be underneath the bottom. And sometimes when we came back, the boat would be gone. I know somebody lived in the shack. And you know, on a real cold night, you know, I remember, you know, sometimes it would just, the temperature would just plummet all the way down to about 45 degrees at night. And there would be some smoke coming out of the smokestack. I know somebody lived in that shack. But you know, in the 18 years I lived there, I never one single time saw the person who lived in that shack. And you know, that shack never got any bigger. It never got any better. They never changed the windows. They never put a new front door on it. Oh, once in a while they would take the old tar paper off the outside and put some new tar paper around the outside. And once in a while they would take an old piece of rusty tin off the top and put a new piece of old rusty tin on the top. But he had some stuff, but he wasn't going anywhere. Or you could be the one who's got his stuff, and he's willing to go somewhere. In fact, every time you ask for a volunteer, you simply say, "We need a volunteer too." And he says, "I'll do it. What are we doing this time?" And it doesn't matter what you're doing, he's willing to volunteer, and he's got his stuff, and he always shows up early. But when he does, he bumps into somebody while he's there every single time. You know somebody like that? Are you thinking about somebody right this minute? Don't say their name out loud. Or you could be the one who has his stuff and he knows where he's going. He's got it all organized and he knows exactly where he's going. But woe be to the one that ever bumps into his stuff. You know somebody else like that, don't you? You're thinking about somebody else right now, aren't you? Or you could someday become the one who's mature enough that you can get your stuff together. And you can make enough progress in life that when Moses or whoever the leader is needs some help, they can call on you to help them. Which one do you want to be? The one with no stuff? Or the one who's got some stuff and he causes trouble? Or the one who gets upset when somebody bumps into his stuff? Or the one who becomes mature enough that he can help others get their stuff through life? And by the way, there's no greater joy in life than knowing that you helped somebody else get a little further down the road on their journey. And you know, each one of those positions that I mentioned there are both important and necessary. You know, it's necessary that there be somebody on this level while there's somebody else on this level. It's important that there be somebody on this level while somebody else is on this level. If there was nobody on this level, there'd be no candidates for this level. You know, if there was nobody still way down there on that level, there would be no candidates to someday become as wonderful as I have become. Don't let it frustrate you that some people need your help. I think it was Colin Powell who said, when they cease to bring you their problems, you cease to be their leader. Dr. Jack Hiles used to say, the leader is the one who hides his panic. You know, if all of a sudden we begin to smell a little smoke, and suddenly we realize the building's on fire, somebody would jump up out of their pew and they would run around and around in circles and go nowhere. Their life verse is when in danger, when in doubt, run in circles, scream and shout. Somebody else would jump up out of their pew and they would go straight out the back door and knock down three people on the way out. And somebody else would very calmly stand up and say, why don't you folks go out that door and you hold the door open and don't stop in the hallway, go all the way out, and you folks go out that door and you folks, and all of a sudden we would think he must be the leader. But you know, he's smelling the same smoke all the rest of us are smelling. Now, you won't panic and you won't get frustrated as often if you'll do the 7 things I'm going to teach you tonight. Now, don't panic when I say 7 things, because I'm going to give them to you, literally, I'm going to give them to you in about 10 minutes' time. About 10 minutes' time, I'm going to give you 7 things, and I promise you, if you'll do these 7 things, you won't get frustrated as often. I promise you, you won't panic as often. And they're the type of things, you'll remember most of them, but you might want to write down 1 or 2 of them, so if you want to get out a piece of paper, feel free to do that. And I'm going to give you the 7 things that you should do to keep from panicking or getting frustrated as you have to help other people with life. Number 1. Give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Give the other person the benefit of the doubt. You know, it may be he didn't mean to do it. You know, it just may be it was just strictly an accident. He didn't know you were going to be there. He didn't realize what you were going through at the time. He didn't try to hurt you on purpose. Maybe he didn't mean to do it. Or maybe he's doing the best he can with what he's got to work with. You know, there's many cases where if you just understood what it is that the other guy has to work with, you'd be proud of him that he's doing as good as he is instead of upset with him that he's not doing better. Amen. Or you know, it may be he would do better if somebody would teach him. Have you ever heard the statement, or have you ever made the statement? I have. Anybody ought to know better than that. Yeah, anybody who's been taught what you've been taught. But if they've never been taught, then you can't expect them to know what you know. Or maybe he misunderstood what he was supposed to do. I've worked at a college for 42 years, and I'll tell you one thing I've learned about college students. You can get about 50 college students together, and you can set them down, and you can get all of them to look right at you, and you can thoroughly explain what you want them to do. And you're doing good if you get about 48 of them to do it similarly to the way you want it done. But I guarantee you every single time without fail, there's one that's going to do it not different than you asked, exactly the opposite of the way you asked for it to be done. And then there's always one who doesn't even know you made an announcement. Or maybe he would understand, maybe you would understand why he did what he did if you knew where he came from or what his circumstances were. tell you something else I've learned from about college students. Every year we have one. Every year there's one. Sometimes two, but always at least one. And we'll have 400 or 500 students on our campus, some years as many as 1,000. And everybody else sees it this way, except him. There's one every year, sometimes two. And I'm not being unkind. I'm just stating the fact. I don't know how else to say it. He's just different. He just sees it different than everybody else. And you look at him and you scratch your head and you think, now why does everybody else see it this way? And then about 2 years later, his parents come visit the campus. All questions answered. But you know, it's never those folks from Texas. It's always those Oklahoma people, every single time. Number one, give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Number two, assume the best, not the worst. When you're dealing with a situation, assume the best, not the worst. Look, don't automatically figure out the worst possible thing that could possibly happen and assume that's going to happen. Don't be like, who's that guy we all learned about him in American history? Winnie the Pooh. Remember him? Don't be like Winnie the Pooh's buddy, Eeyore. You remember Eeyore the donkey? Oh me, oh my, everything's bad, but don't worry, it'll get worse. Assume the best, not the worst. Number three, remember you only heard one side of the story. Don't panic. You've only heard one side of the story. You say, but Brother Ray, this story is just so black and white. I mean, it's just so odd. There can't be two. Oh, yeah, there's two sides to every story. And I know sometimes you're tempted to say, well, I don't need to see the other side, hear the other side of the story. I saw it with my own eyes. Well, that leads me to number four. Even if you saw it with your own eyes, remember, you only saw it from your viewpoint. You only saw it through your line of reasoning. You know, you could go downtown Dallas to some big intersection where they had a wreck, and you could interview the four witnesses that were on the four different corners, and you get four different stories because they saw it from four different viewpoints. Number five, this is my favorite one, don't take it personal. When you're dealing with somebody else and you're trying to work something out, don't take it personal. You know, you wouldn't worry as often about what people think of you if you realized how seldom they do. You know, very, very few of us have time to get up early, get dressed, get in our car, figure out where you're going, get there first, wait for you to get there, and then bump into you on purpose. I'm sorry, we just don't have time. Don't take it personal. And that leads me to number six. I realize that there are some cases where you can give the other person the benefit of the doubt. You can try to assume the best. You can wait till you hear both sides of the story. You can make sure you're not taking it personal, but it's just a fact that there are some cases where the other person is simply having what I call a weak moment. And that leads me to number six. It's our job to absorb each other's weak moments. You know, one of these days you're going to have a weak moment. One of these days you're going to make a mistake. And when you do, you're going to want somebody to be forgiving. One of these days, you're going to say something, and when the last word is about this far out of your mouth, you're going to be reaching out there, grabbing it, trying to put it back in, but it's too late. You already said it. I remember when I had been on staff at the First Baptist Church of Hammond for about 2 years, Brother Hiles called me and another staff member in one day, and he said, "Ray, I want you and this staff member to work together on this project." He said, "Ray, I want you to do this, this, and this." And he said to the other fella, "I want you to do this, this, and this. And I want the two of you to work together. And when you finish, I want you to come back and complete the project and bring it back to me." So we left, and I did this, this, and this. And he didn't do this, this, and this. And we couldn't finish the project because he hadn't done his part. Well, I knew Brother Hiles was a very fair and a very honest and a very just person. And so I knew all I had to do was just go explain to Brother Hiles. I knew I didn't have to embellish the story at all. I just went in and told him. I said, "Brother Hiles, I did this, this, and this, and he hasn't done this, this, or this." And I knew Brother Hiles would take care of it. And Brother Hiles said, "Ray, if I could get either one of the two of you to be a good Christian right now, I wouldn't have to referee." And I straightened my shoulders up as tall as I could and walked out from under his office door and learned a lesson. It's our job to absorb each other's bad moments. And by the way, if the other person knows you're absorbing their bad moment, you're not. Have you ever heard this attitude? I've not only heard it, I've had it before. You know, this attitude of, "Okay, all right, I'll be a wonderful Christian while you act like a jerk." No, you're not absorbing somebody's bad moment, you're having one. And then number 7, love and help any needy person, regardless of where they fit in. If they're the one who has no stuff, or if they're the one who has some stuff and they're not going anywhere, or if they're letting their stuff bump into everybody else, or if they get upset when somebody bumps into them, or if they're the wise one that can help sometimes, and even the one to whom we take the tough cases, everybody needs some help sometimes. Aren't you glad you're in the kind of church that you know, because of the pastor you have, that regardless of where you are, regardless of what time of the day or night it is, if you've got a problem, all you have to do is just stop and call your pastor. And regardless of what he's doing, he'll stop and send his wife to help you. No, even the one to whom we take the tough cases, everybody needs some help now and then. Dr. Hiles used to have a radio broadcast every morning from 9 to 9:30, it was called From the Pastor Study, because he broadcast live from his pastor study. It wasn't the kind of broadcast where he preached the Bible or any of that kind. It was just chit-chatty, just to get to know the neighborhood, just to let the neighborhood get to know us, just a friendly. He would tell a joke. He'd tell us where he'd been that week to preach. He would play a song, and you could hear him whistling while the song was playing. He'd make himself a cup of hot tea. You could hear him sipping on that while they were taking prayer requests. But every day, he always ended the broadcast with the exact same words: "Remember, be good to everybody, because everybody's having a tough time. And goodbye from the pastor study." Parkside Baptist Church will reach its limit. And it will someday reach the point to where it has helped every single person it can possibly help, and will never be able to help another person if we all depend on one person to do everything. Or if we depend on a small handful of people to do everything. But if every single member of this church tonight would step up to the next level and become a little more mature than they have been in the past, take these 7 things or other things that God spoke to your heart about tonight and use them to become a little more mature, you could take on the responsibility of helping one more and one more and one more, and you never know it. One of these days you may be helping 10 people. One of these days you may be helping 50 people. One of these days there may be somebody sitting in this room right here tonight. One of these days you could look around and go, "Wow, there's 100 people in this group that I'm helping on this bus route or in this Sunday school class or in this ministry or this part of the church or in this section of town. And when that happens, there's no limit to how many people can be reached and helped by Parkside Baptist Church.
Thank you for joining us today. For more audio or video content, you can visit our website at parksidebaptist.org.